Hey A1 fans, Andy here. We're going to Cisco Live and we can't wait to see you there. If we see you wearing an A1 or Cables to Cloud shirt at Cisco Live, we'll enter you in our giveaway that includes a bunch of cool prizes like an A1 branded Yeti cup and an OCG of your choice from our friends at Cisco Press. Don't have a shirt? No problem. Head to the link in our bio and grab yours today. See you soon.
This is the Art of Network Engineering podcast. In this podcast, we'll explore tools, technologies, and talented people. We aim to bring you information to expand your skill sets and toolbox and share the stories of fellow network engineers. Welcome to the Art of Network Engineering. I am AJ Murray. I'm back.
Yeah.
It's back. Feels good to be back.
Daddy's home.
That's right. Daddy's home.
And that's the house creepy. Is a mess.
That's right. What did you guys do while I was gone? No.
There's holes in the walls. The doors are off the hinges.
No, I kept up. I enjoyed the episodes you guys did while I was away. So nice work, fellas. Nice work.
There you go. Yeah. Tim totally saved us that one night.
Big shout out
to Tim. That was a good episode. That great topic, technical interviews. Yeah. It was very well received.
For a last-minute effort, that was a really good show, I thought.
Wait, what are you talking about, last-minute effort? That was well planned.
I mean,
we planned that a long time ago.
Yeah, we planned that one a while out.
It went so well, we're just going to wing it from now on.
Yeah.
Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing great,
What's
man.
New in Dan's you? World?
Looking for new monitor solutions.
What, was there a problem with your old one? You don't have to answer
solar
that.
Ones.
It's
a no-no now.
I'm surprised Nolan you're wins. Wearing that. Isn't that like...
It's what I wore to work today.
While you're looking for a new solution to replace it?
Yeah, right.
Andy, how are you doing?
I'm good. I got a heating pad on my back. I'm got my beard coming in. Life is good. Yeah. I spent 3 hours today learning some Python at work.
I was going to ask how your automation journey is going.
I think I'm ready to stop complaining about it. So,
yes.
Yeah, I know.
Just embrace it, man. Yeah, just embrace
thank
it.
You.
Sorry, Dan. Well, like the first 4 or 5 months of the podcast, I complained about how are all these people studying and I'm not. So, I figured out the studying. I now study at 5 a.m. per Tim Burt, and now
is that working for you? Is getting up early working for you?
It is. It is.
Yeah.
The only trick is to get to bed at a reasonable time. And, you know,
yeah,
my wife's on board. She's not like, yo, dude, we got to hang out. What's up? So, like, she's been supportive. And, it's been good.
It's awesome.
It goes by fast, you know? The hour's gone. The kids are up. And I'm just, you know, into the meat of it and want to keep going. But, studying is good. And I think I'm over my, you know, fear of automation. I'm just jumping in. And the key was getting what everybody's been saying, getting a specific use case. You know, I have something we need to do at work, and it's kind of easy. Like if I was doing it manually, it'd be easy. So they're like, hey, write down how you would do it, like your workflow, and then we'll figure out how to, you know, apply some code to automate it. So it's
right. Once you have that skin in the game, right? Like once you have your use case, like what's going to make your life easier? You're that much more invested in like, okay, how does this thing work?
Yeah. And there's people that are contributing to like our automation efforts. Like we're early on, but there's guys who know what they're doing. And, you know, I'm just kind of sitting there like twiddling my thumb. So I'm excited now that maybe I could have a win, you know, for me, like, hey, I did something, guys, with automation. So, you know, I'm motivated. It's good.
So, nice. Well, and I think a big thing for me, I've said this multiple times, but automation is cool and all when everybody's talking about it and all the, you know, little tricks that they make it do and stuff. But the best thing for me when I was kind of getting down that automation path was actually having, you know, a purpose. Objective, right?
Yeah.
Yes, a use case.
Yep.
Because it's really cool when you see all these people make, you know, automation do all this crazy stuff. But I have to find a use case to actually make sense of it.
Right. Yeah. Like, how does it apply in your environment? How can you leverage
exactly?
It? And then on top of that, me being accountable seems to be key. I know that's like new information, but once I put my hand up, we had a meeting and somebody was like, "Yeah, we're gonna have to get this, you know, opened up eventually for this tool to work." And I was like, "You know what? I think that's kind of easy." So I volunteered and now my name's on the board and people are counting on me and knowing that, because otherwise I'm just going to try to hide. It scares me. I don't want to do it. They're taking care of it. So putting my hand up, being accountable is help. But yeah, man, things are good. I'm happy you're back. I missed you.
I missed you guys too. Yeah. I really did.
Yeah. It just didn't feel the same, I guess. I don't know.
On the road, you know, it was working long days, mostly nights. And so, you know, I mean, I have every intention of, you know, traveling is a very regular part of my job prior to the pandemic. So, you know, once things return to normal, I have every intention of figuring out some sort of traveling recording solution so I don't have to miss so many. But that just wasn't an option this past trip because, you know, working nights. So wasn't
able in crazy hours, like 14, 15 hour days. It was nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't you say you had to, you know, put the solution in or work on the solution after hours and then also be ready like pretty early for any kind of support, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. I had to do that about back in 2015 or so. We had a major network upgrade and we were doing the same thing. It was like each day during the day we were either you know, doing support for something broke or we were preparing the changes that we were going to put in that night, and we had to wait till after 6 o'clock at night before we could put all of our changes in. And then we would do our changes. We'd be there till like 11 o'clock midnight or so doing all those changes. And then I had to be there like super early, like 6 o'clock in the morning to be ready to support anything that it broke. So those were some rough days.
Yeah.
So I totally feel you on that.
Yeah. So I won't go into too much detail, but we were replacing switches at a healthcare facility. So, you know, replacing a bunch of switches, as many as we were doing, which was like over 200 across two decent sized medical centers. And then a bunch of these like outpatient type clinic areas, right? You know, smaller kind of doctor's offices kind of thing. So the work could only start after 5 o'clock. And because of the amount of switches we were doing and the time we were on site, we were, contractually obligated. Plus, like, if we want to get the work done in the time we're there, we're doing like, you know, 20 switches at least a night. And so we had an engineering team that I was on, and then we had an installation team, and we were providing oversight to the installation team because the installation team was very green and hadn't exactly done this before, which was kind of a shock to us because we were sold a different bill of goods.
Righty-tighty, lefty-loosey.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then there were like, you know, teaching them how to stack switches and all that stuff. So that was fun. So there was the whole installing late at night, and then we did our due diligence, I feel like, but you know, at 11 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night, there's not a lot of doctors and nurses hanging around to test medical devices for us. So there was inevitably, some fallout, not a ton, the next morning.
There's no testing, right? You just got to wait until they open the doors and see
what happens. The testing that we could do was like PCs and phones, right? That's all we knew how to do. We didn't know like where all these devices live. Some of them didn't live on the network. They were only brought out when needed kind of thing. So
it's got to be a lot of pressure in healthcare, you know? Like they can't deliver healthcare if there's a problem with the network.
Yeah,
I think one thing too, because I've run into problems with that, what you just described about not being able to test it, is management. Sometimes I think they don't understand that.
Right.
And when everybody comes back in the next day and it's all broke and they're like, well, how did you just leave it like that? It's like, well, I don't have a way to test it. Right. Because I mean, sometimes I feel like some changes are better to be done during the day. Just have everybody know that, hey, there's going to be, you know, maybe an outage for, you know, 15, 20 minutes or something like that. But at least that way, you know, immediately if it's going to be broke or not, like you can have people test it.
And, man, I always used to fight like hell to get testers on when we're doing big stuff. Yeah, and the business units do not want to bother the clients. So, you know, they invariably not. Yeah. And then, like you said, they open up, stuff's not working. And then people want to know, well, why? You know, like, hey, we asked for validators, you know, and we didn't get them. I wanted to ask you, AJ, does it feel any different traveling? Like, you know, you had your first trip. It was kind of weird. And like, are you kind of getting a little more accustomed to being out and about flying and feeling a little?
Yeah. The first trip I took back in February was with a different airline than I took this trip. And I will say that this particular airline was a little bit better regarding like the pandemic stuff. They had like an aisle blocked out, even on a smaller, you know, commuter jet. which was nice. So, you know, I had like a row of seats to myself, can hang out, relax, stretch out a little bit. I'm a man of larger stature, so it was nice.
Big Papa.
That's right. I will say I was in the state of Indiana, and I'm not sure if they know that there's still a pandemic going on.
Yeah.
But, but I mean, it was nice, though, like, you know, there was definitely people who had their opinions about how they wanted to deal with it, and that's fine. There's, but there was still definitely some guidelines around how restaurants and stores and other places should handle it. So there were a few times where we had to dine out because we wanted to eat before work or after work. And that, yeah, pretty much all the places were following said guidelines, and things felt, you know, pretty safe.
I've gone to pick up like takeout here.
Yeah.
And the restaurants are just packed. I mean, just, I think PA's just given up.
Yeah.
You know, like I should mention, I got my second, I haven't really announced it or broadcast it, but I got my second COVID shot on Thursday.
Oh,
so yeah. 2 weeks.
So
2 weeks from Thursday, I'll be fully protected. So the CDC says.
Impacted you at all? Have you felt any effects of that?
Physically or?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had a sore arm, which wasn't a big deal. And I'll tell you, the day afterward, like Friday, I just kind of felt like it was like the, you know, when you're getting sick and the day before you're kind of like, I kind of feel a little funny.
Inky.
I just kind of felt like I didn't have a fever. I was fine, but just kind of all day. Yeah. I'm like, I kind of feel like I might be getting sick tomorrow. But then, you know, I took a nap and it was gone. But I got to tell you, even psychologically, it's interesting what it's done for me, because we took the kids out over the weekend, stopped at this donut place. And again, I don't know if people are just, you know, fatigued, but you know, no, people aren't 6 feet apart anymore. People are on top of each other in line. And I don't know if it's part of my fatigue as well, or just that I know I got the vaccine going, but like, I feel less anxious around, you know, people that are, you know, we're all messed up and all that stuff, but I don't know. I'm really looking forward to moving on to the next phase of, you know, being
life.
Like, so well, yeah. So the CDC just came out, and we can edit this out, I guess, if it's irrelevant, but the CDC just came out and said that if you're a vaccinated household, you can invite an unvaccinated household into your house. You don't have to wear masks and everybody's safe. That is
interesting.
That is huge compared to where we were before. I haven't had any family in my house for a year, which really sucks.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to kind of get back to, you know, some life and seeing people. So anyway, yeah.
Cool. I'm glad it's going well for you. Because I have heard there's, in fact, my wife's boss, he recently got his, I think, first or second shot. I can't remember where he's at. But it's not going so well for him. He's having some effects of it. And he's been down and out of work for like the last day or two. And my wife has had to deal with that. So it's just interesting, you know, like.
My brother-in-law had 103 fever for 24 hours.
Wow.
My father-in-law slept for 22 hours. He was, you know, and my brother-in-law is a relatively, you know, healthy guy. So. Yeah, you hear a lot of, you know, my running joke is it's you know, it beats dying. So like, you know, even if even if you're sick for a day, you know. But yeah, I know it's a touchy topic. 50% of the country feels differently than the other half. So, but I'm glad that you're able to travel safely, and I'm just really excited that
It was really nice to travel. Honestly, yeah. Like I've never been to Indiana. It was really cool to get out there. I could not believe how flat that place is. I have not been somewhere like that flat. You know, I've lived in New England my entire life, and I know the mountains here aren't gigantic, but it's not flat like Indiana. So,
don't they have a lot of windmills over there?
I actually don't remember seeing any windmills. Maybe like
I think
one or
they
two
do, because I think when if you drive to like Chicago, I think you pass a huge windmill farm.
Yep. But yeah, tons of farmland, wide open flat. So it was pretty cool. It was nice to travel again. So I am looking forward to getting back to more travel. But I was going to jump into wins. Did you have another thought?
Just glad you're back.
Let's hear them wins.
I'm glad to be back. Thank you. Really glad to be back. So lots of wins. I'm super excited about a lot of these because they're people that we've been interacting with over the past several months, encouraging them. And so it's nice to see them get some wins. So without further ado, running on empty, as he goes by in the Discord and on social media, he got a huge raise and a great review at work for all of his hard work. And so it's nice to finally see that recognition come in for him. So congratulations, running on empty.
Good job.
The underscore EOC passed his Cisco security network, Cisco or securing networks with Cisco Firepower exam, and that now makes them a Cisco CCNP security certified.
Nice. Very nice.
Congratulations, the underscore EOC. Jay Petta, the screen name, passed the Microsoft AZ-900 exam.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly which one that is, but I know it's a Microsoft Azure exam. I think the AZ-900 might be the intro.
Okay.
But I'll have to look that up. But congratulations to Jay Petta for that one. Charlie O'Riordan, I hope I'm saying that right, scored a new job working at Microsoft as a consultant on Azure and networking.
Nice.
That's pretty dope.
That is dope.
Yeah.
That's pretty dope. Congratulations, Microsoft. Charlie. Mm. Casey Valdivia has an exciting new opportunity to be promoted into management as a trainer where they work. So congratulations on an exciting new opportunity.
He's my cable guy, homie.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. You got a big promotion. Nice.
Bill Murray, not the famous actor Bill Murray, unless maybe it is. I don't know. It doesn't look like him though. Bill Murray passed the VMware Advanced Design NSXT data center exam. So congratulations, Bill.
Wow. Good job. Good job.
The Real JK recently passed their CCNA. So congratulations to the Real JK. And Bits to Bytes, our buddy Chris on social media and in the Discord, two big wins. So 2 weeks ago, he passed his CCNA. And now he just announced, I think earlier today or yesterday, that he scored a job as a junior developer working for a network automation company. And he will be putting together demos and building use cases to show their network automation capabilities that they can bring in to their customers. So that's just absolutely huge. You know,
that's amazing.
2 weeks ago, he was scored a CCNA. Right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Chef CCNA developer. Hello.
Hey. Amazing. Picking up some automation tools.
Yeah. Is that everybody?
Absolutely amazing. That's all of them. That's like the all the wins, I think, from like the last 2 weeks.
I would like to offer a collective goat scream.
Wow.
I love it.
Do you know the screaming goat?
The screaming goat. Yeah,
I showed you that.
Did you? Well, my wife got it for me. My wife got it for me for Christmas, and it's my stress relief at work. If I get annoyed,
I like it.
I feel so good. It dissipates all my tension. $8 on Amazon. Everybody should have a screaming goat.
Dan, I showed the video that you shared with us because of that screaming goat with my family, and it's now like the highlight.
Oh yeah,
we watch it all the time.
The Taylor Swift.
Yep. The Taylor Swift swimming goat.
Yeah.
Screaming goat. It's awesome. Hilarious.
Too much.
So what are we talking about tonight, AJ?
So tonight, I think there's like kind of a couple different kinds of engineers. And the two that, you know, come to my mind are kind of the siloed engineer, right? Like you have your technology and that's what you do. And then there's also the jack of all trades, master of nothing. And I personally have been mostly a jack of all trades, master of nothing most of my career. How about you guys?
I'm definitely a jack of all trades, master of none.
Up until recently, I was siloed as all get out. I WAN and only WAN. You know, I could go on and tell you it's a pretty big WAN and it was a lot to manage and a lot of services that we had to manage through that WAN, but just WAN, didn't touch anything else, and that was for like 5 years of this job so far. It's recently changed and now I'm doing all the things all at once. I kind of want to go back to the WAN.
Wait, Andy wants to be siloed.
Well, you know, you're protected, you're insulated, the expectations were lower, you know, in a sense.
Sure.
We didn't touch any firewalls. We didn't touch the core. Nothing to do with compartments. The LAN was somebody else's. Keep the WAN up and you know, we're good. But
But then are you not like, so the way I look at that is like, I don't have to be a rock star at everything, but I got to be good at everything, right? But I feel like in a siloed position, you have to be a rock star at whatever you're siloed in.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I mean, right. If you're, you know, if you have
I just
one,
feel like that.
No, totally. I mean, I would expect that as well if I was managing, you know, a team like that. Like, guys, we're, you know, we got one thing here. Again, it's a complicated environment, and there's a lot going on, and it's not for the faint of heart or junior folks, but yeah, I, you know, you can't be an you guys are jack of all trades, right? You can't be an expert at, you know, 15 technology stacks. It's just impossible. Right. So I would say I was a WAN expert, and I will say in the past 8 or 9 months of this new job, I am an expert at nothing.
That's a good position to be in, though, because now you're learning, right?
I'm learning so much, yeah. So that's the upside of it. But, you know,
I think that
sometimes I'd be
for
tired.
Me, yeah, yeah. You just got to take a nap. So, you know, when we had the mental health episode, we were talking about like ADHD and stuff like that, and I definitely suffer from that, but I think for me with that, if I had to just do one thing all day long, I just don't think I could do that.
I'm with you there, man.
but don't get me wrong, because I feel like being a jack of all trades is a double-edged sword.
Yeah,
because here lately I've got like, I feel like 20 projects going on, and in a single day, I can be jumping from Palo Alto, configuring something on a VPN in ASA. I could be spinning up they call them virtual servers in F5. A virtual server in F5 is basically a VIP address, right? And I could be spinning up, I do something, even messing with logs in F5, you know, trying to figure out why something's not sent into the right pull node. Or pool member, and then I can switch over to messing with Meraki out in a branch office, you know, like why a user can't get connected to the wireless, you know, and then I can switch over to, I mean, it just keeps going. Like I could be in AWS, and this is all in a day's work, right?
But this, it sounds like it's still all networking, you know, kind of related, right?
Yeah, it's definitely like, I don't deal with Active Directory or anything like that anymore,
right?
You know, like when I first started my position, I was technically a systems and network administrator, right? And I did a little bit of server, a little bit of Active Directory, DNS, that kind of stuff. And then when we dedicated the network department, I went straight into that, and I haven't gone back. So, but I'd still touch servers and whatnot. Like I was telling you guys earlier tonight. Today I was messing with I was putting a data domain in our fabric, right, in our ACI fabric. So there, you know, I was messing with that. And I don't know,
do you guys find it challenging jumping from one technology stack to another? Yeah.
Definitely.
That's
because
the hard time.
It's like I've got a like when I'm deep into a technology, right, and then someone, you know, calls me and they're like, hey, we can't get this working, or, you know, whatever the case may be, or my app's not able to talk to, you know, this or that. Well, then I got to put the brakes on wherever I was at.
Right.
And then I've got to jump over into, you know, this other technology. But I mean, like AJ says, to be fair, it is all networking, right? So networking's networking, but having to jump between how this works versus how that works. And then you have to think about like the logic that a device runs a packet through. And it's just, sometimes it gets a little overwhelming, but it definitely sucks having to jump like that.
So when I was doing the jack of all trades, master of nothing, I was like an IT generalist for several different companies. And, you know, one day it's Exchange and Active Directory, maybe a little bit of networking. And then the next day it's like security. And I've worked for a lot of manufacturing firms. So there was a lot of focus on supporting CAD workstations and the licensing that goes behind that, and their servers to support all their drawings and this and that and the other thing. And I learned very early on not to come to work with a plan because every time I had a plan of, okay, this is what I'm going to do today, something happened and completely derailed that plan, and it was just like shifting gears. And so, you know, I kind of kept a punch list of things that I needed to get done at some point. And if I got to it that day, great, I crossed it off. And if not, I'll try tomorrow.
Yep.
But you know, now it's more like, you know, in my current position, it's more like what Dan is saying. Like I'm not so wide that I'm touching Active Directory, VMware, and other stuff. It's still focusing on networking, but you know, 1 week it might be ACI, and the next week it's a traditional network upgrade, swapping out some switches, or maybe we're talking about SD-WAN, or you know, maybe we're doing some WAN stuff. Like it's still all within networking, but it still does bounce around quite a bit.
So was it a conscious choice Like, did you guys make a career choice that you didn't want to be siloed? Like, cause for me, it's just kind of the jobs that I got offered. You know, I got into the knock. We've all heard that story enough. And then when I got the job I have now, we were client side, but it was WAN. The client right. managed their LAN, and we just had to get them connected to our data centers. And then when I got moved to data center, it was all WAN. So it's really just kind of been my career progression. Like, I didn't choose, like, mm-hmm. I want to do one thing and one thing only, because obviously now I got thrown into the deep end of, like, all the things.
Yeah. But
did you guys make, like, was that a conscious decision? Because what I'm thinking is, in the job market, I would imagine it's more valuable to have a more broad skill set. Like,
right.
me just being a WAN guy that doesn't know automation, I've seen the writing on the walls, you know, for the past year or two. And then when Cisco yeah. changed all the stuff, and then everybody we've met here and you guys, and then what's going on at work, like, route switch isn't enough anymore.
Right.
So
for me, it was a conscious decision okay. because I love being a generalist. I like working in IT, but networking was the passion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to find a position where I could focus more on networking and go deeper into networking rather than the little bit that I was doing previously.
But it's not like you wanted to be like, I just want to do one thing. Like, you figured, let me have right. a varied skill set. Like, you had that yeah. foresight going in.
Yeah. Right. When I thought about being siloed before, like, I thought about, like, just working on Active Directory, and I would not want to be a person that just works on Active Directory all day or just works mm-hmm. on Exchange all day. Like, working in such a massive environment where all, you know, you have a person that just works on Exchange all day. Like, I couldn't do that. Like, there's.
See, I think you might have nailed it there. Do you think it's a function of the size of the company you're in?
Absolutely, because yeah. you know, you work for a very large, what, Fortune 500, 100, you know, kind of business.
Yeah.
And so you have people that are dedicated to these things.
The specialists and everything,
have to.
Right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah, you have to.
And why do you think you have to? I don't disagree with you, but how come
it's just so
a more complex, large
I think when you... Yeah. When you are adopting a technology for such a large organization, you're going way deeper into it than you know mm-hmm. you would at a smaller organization. Like,
it's just way more scaled, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So like, you just got times however many you know
right
people or how many servers or whatever the case right. may be. Like,
the bigger the environment, you know, the tougher.
When right? you're supporting like hundreds yeah. of thousands of users, you need a bunch of, you know, domain controllers to support that, or
right.
Exchange servers with mailboxes to support that.
So if you had one guy doing all of it for Fortune 100, I feel
sorry
company.
For that poor soul.
Yeah, because it's just too much work. Right. I mean, code upgrades alone on gear would keep you busy all year,
yeah.
let alone doing anything else, just because there's so much gear, I guess, right?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And I've worked, you know, for organizations that had less than 1,000 people, and so we had like two Exchange servers and maybe a handful of domain controllers. And so that was still relatively manageable with a small team.
Right.
But there still wasn't enough work there for a person to be doing Exchange all day or Office 365 all day. You know, maybe initially, like, you know, because we were on ramping to Office 365, so there was a lot of work to do there to prepare for that. But that was just like the project phase, right? Like, once we got into the O&M phase, it was just, you know, it became part of like the regular tasks.
So do you think the majority of new people breaking into the field are getting jobs at smaller places that would be a jack of all trades?
I think it depends on where you live and,
yeah,
and the opportunities. Right. Like, I don't think it's unfathomable for a junior person to land, you know, working with you, maybe yeah. not, you know, directly alongside you, but working at the same company you do.
Right.
Being a network engineer.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like, so for me, you know, I didn't know what I was getting into when I first got into it. I was excited to learn everything I could, right? I just wanted to get my hands in everything. So I think now, with the years that I've had, if I was to move somewhere else or, you know, go to a different job or something like that, I think I would tend to not want to be siloed still, just because I know how I am or how if something can get boring to me or something like that. It'd just be rough. But I will say, I'm so flip flop too, because one thing I wish I could get more time with is the F5s. Like, I think it's a really cool technology, the big IP LTM stuff. But I just don't have the time
right.
to dig super deep into it. And so that's another downfall of being a jack of all trades, right? Or having to wear a lot of hats at a company, is you might not have the time to make something look as pretty as you want it to. And that's kind of like the F5s for me.
Yeah. I will say, for me, the most frustrating thing is troubleshooting, right? Like I'm troubleshooting an issue and I know it's an Active Directory, like the solution is over there, but I can't cross the fence, right? Like it's outside of my boundary. Even though I know what the problem is and I know where to go to fix it, I don't have the access to go and do that. Yeah. Right. And for me, that varies from customer to customer, because I could be working with a small customer and the network admin is also the sysadmin and has the keys to the kingdom. Or I could be working with a larger customer like, you know, Andy's organization, and the guy I'm working with just does LAN or just does WAN, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. And that was one advantage of being siloed, is I knew our WAN so well that if something did break, troubleshooting, I could tell you in 5 minutes if it was the WAN or not. But now, you know, we might have a problem in our internet zone, which is new to me. And I'm like, oh, hell, I'm pulling drawings. How does this work? Where are we doing the thing? And like, so that's the challenge I'm having, is trying to get acclimated to, you know, maybe a dozen stacks of technology. You know, how do you get that all in your head? And it'll come with time, but, you know, to get that level of familiarity and comfort so that I can just jump in one and be able to help out on the fly. Like, I'm not there right now. And that's part of what I miss maybe about being siloed, is like I was looked to as, you know, a leader of sorts. Like I could tell people junior to me how things were working, what to do. People would call me if there was a problem. You know, there's a running joke now. I tell like them, like I'm just the idiot of the group. I'm like, because I'm surrounded by brilliant people. Like it just, you know, it's a good
thing.
But
here's the thing,
though.
Here's the thing, though, is like, I think after you have more time with this, you'll get better, right?
Like I've already gotten better in the, but it's hard, you know, it's, what is it? Like the big fish in the little pond versus the little fish in the big pond. I kind of felt good about myself. I don't want to say I was coasting, but like I knew the flow. I knew what was going on. I knew when I had to work and when I could do something else. And now like everything's new and I'm like, oh my God, like, how does this work? And what is this? And now it's multi-vendor and there's automation and, you know, MPLS and cloud and just all this stuff coming at me. But it is time. And the more time I spend in it, and that's part of why I'm excited too about life slowly returning to normal, at least for us here, like the kids are in school, because I can dedicate a little more and more time as things start to normalize in the world.
Oh yeah.
To be able to focus on this stuff, because I've said it before, if I'm interrupted every 10 to 15 minutes here by the little guys, you know, as soon as I start to get into something, I got to stop. I got to go do something. Like you said, Dan, start all over. Like, where was I and how to, it's been a really tough environment to get acclimated to, you know, to all this stuff. I wish I could remember they sent out like a book at work, and it's basically like being a generalist is where it's at right now. Proven in science and what they're looking for. Like, I think generalist might be the wrong term, but being that jack of all trades, having a varied skill set is very attractive. They need less and less deep dive, like, oh, okay, you are the OSPF expert. You know everything about it. How much value does that really bring to an organization? You've seen the job postings, the job descriptions. They're all looking for the unicorn, somebody who is an expert at everything, you know, who's going to take 50 grand a year. It's like the running joke, right? But the more you know, it seems like the more valuable you'd be. I know you can't get a job at my place now if you don't know automation.
Right.
2 years ago, it wasn't like that. If you were good at route and switch, you know, rock on, come on in. Now that's part of the gatekeeping process. If you don't know automation, sorry, like it's been a...
Don't you think it's interesting how quickly that kind of changed, right? Like it doesn't seem like it was that long ago we were...
It wasn't.
You know, talking about it's coming, but there's probably still some jobs out where you don't need automation. And now you look around, it's just like automation.
Yeah. I think for me too, like the big pain is when you're a jack of all trades is, or at least in my company, I have to do support and I have to do projects. Mm. So it's like, while I'm trying to do project work, if something breaks, okay, now I've got to stop my project work and I got to take on support work. Right. Yep. And then I've got to sit there and, cause you know, sometimes it takes an hour. It might take 2 hours to figure out an issue. Right.
So there's no tier one, right, Dan? There's no knock.
Yeah,
so.
No. Now we have a help desk, but pretty much all they do is
kick it to you.
They take the customer call and then, or, you know, client, whatever you want to call them. They take their call and they turn it into a ticket and then they just forward it over to us and then we have to support
it
at
that point. that doesn't even sound like a help desk. That sounds like an answering service, right?
It sounds like a call center to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it seems like those folks should have like a playbook of like, you know, the common issues that come up, no matter how complex it is. Like if it's a common issue and there's like a set fix to it, like, you know, have a document that walks you through how to fix it. And
I think they do some stuff like, you know, like if a user can't figure out their password, they can reset it for them, that kind of stuff. But when it comes to networking stuff, they don't do anything to troubleshoot. They just pass on the information to us.
I was working on that in the WAN because we were getting paged for everything, and I wanted to come up with some kind of script they could run to basically do all the checks I do every time I get a call. Mm-hmm. You know, look at the aggregation layer. Do you have routes in? Do you have routes out? Can you ping both sides? Like, you know, if you get through all that and this stuff doesn't work, give us a call. But these are the 10 things you should check before you call somebody. You know, that's
yeah.
So is your company, like, do you feel like it's small enough and the network small enough that they don't need dedicated support? Like, is it a size thing?
I think we're getting to the point. I think it's we've ran so lean for so long that they're like, well, why would we hire someone else?
Because it's working, right? Like,
But they don't
take
see
care
how
of everything. We don't need anybody else, man. Dan does it all.
And everybody's running as lean as they can. I mean, even the place I'm at, they're not backfilling, and their automation's going to solve all the problems. Like,
well, and so for our team, we got two new network people, right? We got two new network engineers, and they're one of them, he's pretty fresh, and the other one, she's pretty good. She's got quite a bit of, like, you know, firewall experience and stuff like that. So she can hold her own for sure. So what I've been doing is trying to push when I get certain calls and whatnot, because I think it's also a good learning experience, right? Trying to troubleshoot stuff.
Yeah.
At least it was for me. I think so. What I'm trying to do is like, hey, when a certain call comes in and it's like, hey, this isn't working, right? I'll be like, whoosh, push that over to one of them and let them try to troubleshoot it. That way they can learn our network, you know, and just get better with how our setup is. So I've been getting better about pushing troubleshooting and support, that kind of stuff, to the newer people so that they can get a better grasp on how our network works. So that's been helpful.
It's a good way to learn, kind of get thrown in the fire, set accountability, like, oh God, they think I got to fix this, like,
yeah,
you know,
but
as opposed
the
to hiding.
Problem is right, but the problem is like, we're not tiered, right? Yeah. We're all kind of the same level, I guess you want to say.
Yeah.
And so it kind of feels weird me being like, hey, can one of y'all do this? You know, because it's like I'm not a tier above them or anything like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And it's kind of a double-edged sword, Dan, because I guess if you were in a gigantic company, you'd be buffered. There'd be tears, there'd be a knock, you'd be getting all those calls, and you'd be able to maybe focus more on project work. But you might be siloed because it's so big and everything. You know, maybe a middle range is like better for somebody who wants to get their hands in everything but not be, you know, pushed out to some kind of silo.
Yeah.
So is it you and the other two that just do networking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have. Well, there's one other guy. I think he's almost out the door though. He's about to retire. He's been there for probably 35 years or something like that.
I mean, maybe this is just the manager in me, but I'm feeling like maybe you're the networking lead, and then have the buffer. Like, then you do have the, you know, authority to be like, hey, you guys, like, do the tickets while I do the project work, kind of thing.
Well, hey, if you want to give me that title.
I mean, Dan, you've told me on the side some of the stuff you're doing. You sound like an architect to me, you know. And
Definitely an architect for your business, for sure.
Yeah, like, I mean,
you know the business so well.
And you're designing solutions, you know the needs. Yeah. Like, you know, you're...
Yeah, and so they have recently started a art team, like an architecture review team. Mm. And they put me on that, so...
Nice.
But I don't have the title yet or anything like that, and I don't really see myself as an architect, just because of my knowledge level. I think,
you
but
as an architect,
Dan. Well, thank you. Maybe for my company, I could definitely be an architect in that sense.
But that's what we're talking about, right? Yeah, the size of the company, your familiarity with. Like, maybe you wouldn't be an architect where I'm at, but where you're at, you are. And once you have that title, now you're an architect. You know, if you go to a mega company, they're not going to, you're just an architect. They're not going to know, like, oh, he's not an architect.
No, I'm the very first thing in the interview. All right, listen, guys, I know my title says architect, but At this place, I might be a junior network engineer. I don't know. Like, we'll see.
I used to joke when I first became a network engineer at the NOC because I couldn't believe engineer was in my job title because I can barely multiply. I'm like, I'm not a real engineer. Like, there's people building bridges and skyscrapers. Like, you know, I play with packets.
There you go.
Kind of a different engineering.
I feel like I'm starting to get a little bit more closer to where I want to be in the sense of letting the newer people kind of do more of the support stuff and then let me work on or focus on project work and like bringing in new solutions and stuff. Because one thing I'll say, I think, completely for a person who wears a lot of hats and stuff, I see the bigger picture of our company, right? When it comes to the network and the different technologies that they're trying to use for the business side, I definitely understand the bigger picture now because of, you know, dealing with so many different things.
And do you keep your eyes on what's coming too, Dan, like down the road? Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that sounds like
architecture to me. Yeah, I've been like when, you know, AWS and Azure and all that got real big, we were jumping into it and just kind of, you know, playing around, seeing what we could do.
And did you build all that? Like, you were responsible for...
It was me and one of our systems guys, but he did more of the actual cloud work and whatnot. Yeah. But I did the, like, you know, building the tunnels between us and the cloud, right, and that kind of stuff. When it comes to like the networking side and stuff, I'll do some of that stuff.
Kind of what I'm doing too, like building tunnels and doing the routing in and out. But then there's other heavy hitters who deal on the cloud end. So if you guys were like hiring somebody, would you want a jack of all trades? Like, is that what you would look for?
I think if you didn't
say it out loud, like, that's what you want.
Yeah. So I will say this. I think there's been plenty of time passed since we did the interview process. I did find this one guy, right? And he sounded like a super strong route switch guy, but he had never touched anything cloud, never touched anything load balancers, firewalls. He never touched any of that. He was strictly a route switch guy. And we passed on him because he didn't have any experience in anything else. And
because in my mind, as you're talking, I almost wanted to interrupt and finish the sentence. In my mind, if he's a strong route switch guy, you can teach him all that other stuff. Now, you may not have the cycles or the time to teach him. And if you can find somebody who knows it all, your life is easier. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
And your network may not be so big where you could really keep a strictly route switch person busy all day. Like,
exactly. And that's how our network is right there. Yeah.
But that's the indication of where the career path has gone, right? Like, route switch isn't enough anymore. A strong route switch guy 5 years ago, you probably would have grabbed him. I'm guessing. I mean, I don't know your environment, but when I got into networking not that long ago, route switch. If you're good at it, you got a job, you'll always have a job. Now you got a strong route switch guy. And it's like, well, sorry, buddy. You know, you don't know that eight other technology stacks are running here. So, and you probably found somebody who did know what you needed, right? And
the new guy, he had messed with Cisco Meraki, and we had a huge Meraki project going through at the time, right before we hired that person. And so that's really what I was looking for, was someone that had good Meraki background. And this guy didn't have it. He never logged into the dashboard or anything.
So was that your big project coming up? Because you got me thinking, like, if you're a route switch guy, but you have one, like, if he was good with Meraki, would that have changed your mind? Like, if that was your next big project coming up, right? Mm-hmm. He might not have to know all the other stuff, but like, So you need, it's been my takeaway from the past couple of years, looking at my career, watching my skills become outdated, is you need something besides route switch. Pick something.
Look at it
firewalls,
this way, right?
Cloud, automation, pick something.
Yeah. Well, look at it this way. So let's say that guy did have good Meraki, right? He had some, let me back up. If you find yourself in a situation where you can jump into a company that has a major project coming up, I feel like that's a good first start right there, right? Mm-hmm. Because then you jump on board and you're like thrown into the deep end on a particular product with whatever project's going on. And then at that point, I feel like that sets you up for maybe if you want to go get a better paycheck, right? And you want to jump jobs, go find another job that has another project coming up. Or I don't know. I just feel like if you're getting started out, I feel like that's a good experience to getting into getting experience, right? That's how I kind of think of it. But
and this just popped in my head. So my wife is in marketing. She works for a software company, but she's in marketing, not what we do. But she just started passively looking because she's been where she's at for about a decade, and she feels that her skill set is becoming outdated, that she's not getting to touch all the new things she needs to. And she's for a while it's been okay because she's, she's mom and the kid's sick. She picks him up. She's here. Like she liked being able to be more involved at home. So her job probably wasn't as challenging as she could handle. But now she's looking ahead and thinking like, well, 5 years from now, I might not have the skill set I need. So she kind of sees where her industry's going and where she's at isn't allowing her to vary that skill set and become, a wider base of skills. So it's kind of interesting how just seeing it even in a marketing role, you don't want to be siloed. You don't want to be good at one thing because it's a matter of time until, especially with tech, she's at a technology company, but the rate at which everything changes, whether you're an engineer in marketing, like you got to stay skilled up because you're going to be outdated.
Well, and I think that kind of goes to my point, right? So like, if someone's looking to get into this field, right, and they do find themselves in a job where they're siloed, like let's use the Meraki for example, right? Let's say, hey, we're looking for someone. We're about to jump into this big Meraki project, and you get the job, but all you do is Meraki, right? Well, you can take that project. Let's say it's a year long project or whatever. Get super deep with the Meraki. You've deployed it at hundreds of sites. You've got that experience now, right? Well, then go to your next thing, right? Don't stay stuck in a Meraki position. Yeah, go on to the next thing. And if I guess that what I'm saying is that's if you've only are finding siloed jobs, right? For me, one of the reasons why I've stayed where I'm at for as long as I have is because we keep bringing in new stuff. And so I get to learn new stuff. It's not like I'm sitting at the exact same equipment
you're not getting stale at all.
Exactly. And that's because it's kind of funny because almost every time that I get ready where I'm like, you know what? I'm not really learning anything new. I'm kind of getting tired of this.
That's the curse.
Maybe I should go start looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'm ready to go, somewhere else to learn something new. And then all of a sudden they're like, hey, all of a sudden we're going to open up the wallet and we're going to get a bunch of stuff. And so it's like, all right, here we go.
They read your mind. You just made me think of something, Dan, as you were talking. I think that being siloed might be a choice because even when I was siloed in the WAN, there was this gigantic LAN team that was doing all kinds of cool stuff. And I could have easily applied to one of those jobs. I had a good relationship with those managers. I knew a lot of the guys. Like I could have jumped over and varied my skill set and learned, that side of the house. But I was comfortable. Yeah. And so it's in my experience, it was almost like being siloed eventually became a choice. It wasn't in the beginning. It's the job I got. But, years go by and you're comfortable. And, I was less and less challenged, and that was kind of okay for a while. But
I think that really depends on where you're at in your life, right? Like, there are some days where I welcome, the challenges and learning new stuff. And there are some days where, man, wouldn't it be nice to just mow the lawn and ride on a tractor?
like Forrest Gump.
There's definitely been some days where I'm just like, why did I do this? But not in such a bad way that I regret it. It's just there are just some times where it can feel, I don't feel like overwhelming is the right term, but I don't know. It's just,
the grass is always greener.
I feel like,
right?
Yeah, totally.
You see people coasting and you're like, man, that looks nice. But then the people that are coasting are like, man, I got to do something here. So it's just the human condition. We're never satisfied.
It would be nice to have the opportunity to coast once in a while for a little bit.
Right.
But I definitely couldn't see myself coasting for a very long time. That's just not.
I'm at the wrong company to coast. I don't know if I can find a place that'll pay me more and let me coast, but I don't know. The rate of change has just picked up in technology. It seems like there's so many things going on. How could you possibly coast? Rolling all the stuff out. Even in smaller companies, like you said, Dan, every time you turn around, you open up the wallet, let's deploy this thing. And then you got to figure all that out. It's a good thing because you're getting skilled up and, you're broadening your base. But, it gets kind of tiring after a while. I'm a little tired.
Yeah, I definitely suffer burnout, at work. There'll be seasons of the year where, I'm getting out of work at 4:30 on the dot. and I'm not looking back, you know, until 8 a.m. the next day. Yep. And then there's like right now where I'm at, you know, pretty much every night I've been looking at something at work.
Are you on call a lot? Like, do you get called a lot?
Well, technically we're on call 24/7 where I work.
But do you rotate with, you know, your team?
No, you don't rotate.
So everybody's on call all the time?
Yeah, pretty much. But the good thing is like, it used to be a pain in the rear back in, like, way back in the day when we had kind of, like, shitty gear. And as we've upgraded, we've made things more redundant. We've made things, you know, more resilient and whatnot. And, the technology has gotten better, and we've gotten away from a lot of our legacy stuff. And with that, it's made my life after work much better because, knock on wood, I don't get called that much. So that's,
yeah, nice. I used to work at a place like that. Like, when I first got there, the IT systems and stuff were in such shambles. Like, it was a very responsive environment. Oh, yeah. And through, like, education of management and taking care of issues, we were just, like, able to make some appropriate investments and kind of turn that reactive environment into a proactive environment. So we were scheduling the downtime, doing the maintenance, and that way we didn't get the, you know, unscheduled maintenance windows popping up all over the place.
Exactly. And that's something, like, anybody that's listening that's interested in this kind of stuff, if you put in the time to make sure that you're moving forward or moving towards a more redundant network, like, that makes all the difference right there. I worked really hard as we started getting, you know, new products in and stuff. But, like, and sometimes when you're in a smaller environment, smaller network, they don't just buy everything that you want, right? Like, you gotta, there's a balance there. And, like, one of the things, they never bought dual power supplies for anything that we ever purchased, you know, stuff like that, little things like that. Or they might only have one device that does a certain job, right? Instead of having two devices that are in a, you know, HA pair of some sort. And so as we've moved along, I've always tried to include that in whatever design that we put together. And luckily they've bit, right? They purchased it and they put it and they allowed us to put it in place and all that. And it's made my life, my home life, much better because of that.
Did you have to sell it as, like, hey, you spend this money, we'll have increased uptime?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, right. For sure. The way I look at it is, that sounded very selfish how I said that, is it made my life easier, well, but hey, it makes their life easier too, because guess what? When things went down, the business side saw that, right? And they're in, after a while, it's like, what are you guys doing over there? Why are we having issues every single day, or, you know, whatever? And so eventually now they're like, oh, okay, so we spent a little bit extra money, but guess what? Our systems don't go down all the time. And so it was hard to sell at first, but then it's like they started seeing the light at the end of the tunnel there. And so now pretty much everything we get some kind of redundancy built in with it.
Have you ever had an outage and discovered that your redundancy wasn't as redundant as you thought it was? Like, we used to had everything dual homed, and we'd have a failover and some stuff would go down, and you'd find out that there was, like, the prefix lists were mismatched, you know, like, somebody added it in the A side, but not the B side. Like, so these five clients are down. Like, come on, guys, like, put it in both.
Some of the legacy stuff still is like that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, everything that's major is redundant. Because, like, when I started there, we only had a single core switch.
Oh, wow.
And, like, everything was ran to it. So
is that switch sitting behind you in that rack of gear now?
It might be.
Oh, sorry. We can cut that out.
Yeah.
My bad.
Boop. Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah, no. It's all good. Yeah.
Don't you love taking trophies like that home?
It might be. It might be right there.
Dear bosses, listen to this show. How did you get that 250-pound chassis out without anybody seeing it?
No, they scrapped it to me.
Yeah, that's nice. That's good.
Yeah. That was interesting, putting that in my car. People are like, I had to take two of us to carry it out, you know?
What is that? 4,500,
6,500? Yeah, 4,510.
Yeah. I took a few of those out in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So I guess the advice we'd be giving people, right, is have a varied skill set. I mean, even look at the new blueprint for the CCNA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're adding
all over the map.
There's virtualization there, there's automation in there.
Wireless.
There's VXLAN, there's wireless. Like the industry. Yeah. I'm not saying Cisco Certs, but, you know, it's tied to the industry, right? They've they question leaders and what do you want out of, you know, your people that come out certified. And I feel like it's gotten more and more varied, right?
I think it's important to say that it's not just Cisco that does that, right?
Yeah,
we often, you know, go straight to Cisco about a lot of certifications and stuff like that. And they're obviously, you know, one of the bigger names in our particular industry. But if you look across the board, a lot of certifications are like that, right? Because that's the skill set that's people want, you know, these days.
Right.
I'm not necessarily for or against, you know, being siloed versus the jack of all trades. I think that's a very much a personal preference thing.
Mm-hmm.
My recommendation based on my personal experience is spend some time being the jack of all trades before you decide to go siloed, because I think that having a little bit of experience in everything will help you when you do decide to become a more focused engineer or IT professional.
I can tell you the firewall guys I know that are siloed, they were all route switch guys. You know, they were net engines like us, and then they got into security and like, oh, this is cool, and now that's their specialty. They can route switch, but they found security to be interesting.
I think it would be hard to, I can't, you know, say this from experience, right? Because I've never been a security engineer, but I have to imagine it would hard to be a security engineer without having a good foundation in route switch.
You'd have to. Yeah. They're routing and then, you know.
I think everything comes back to route switch, right?
How you're securing it.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, I've always been interested in it, and I always, because they're these mysterious devices I can't see, I can't access, and I know how important they are, you know, securing the infrastructure. So I've been, you know, talking to our security guys as much as possible. And then, you know, FortiJeff that we just interviewed, like now I'm really interested to, you know, he's going to try to help me out and learn a little bit about security, because, I think it's pretty cool. And that's just one more, you know, piece of gear in line in the path that, you know, you can get comfortable with. I don't want it to be this mysterious box I know nothing about, you know?
I don't know if I would want to be a security person, because it's like security is always, you know, from a management perspective, at least in my experience, the management looks at you and says, you know, tell me I'm secure.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, I can't do that. You know, like attacks are evolving just as much as the technology is. And, you know, you might think you're completely secure and then, you know, something slips through and it's like, oh shit, I didn't think about that.
Right.
I think it's really hard to put like a really solid number on like how secure, you know, you think you are.
I would guess they do what they can, and you could always push back and be like, well, if you want to spend enough money, we can secure the hell out of this place.
Yeah.
But the more secure you are, the less access stuff you have. Like they've been, we've been locking a lot of stuff down, and I understand why, but it makes my job harder and harder. More and more authentication, more and more FAs, like just, I can get to less stuff now. You know, I used to have admin rights on my laptop for years. Nobody does. They took it away company-wide one night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't get it back, and I can't do anything now. So everything I have to, I sound like I'm beating up on my company. I'm not. But now if you want to do anything and you need admin elevated privileges to do it, you know, you're 45 minutes.
Got to get it approved.
You're on with help desk for at least an hour.
Yeah.
They got to give you the elevated privilege to, so, you know. There's always that
piece of software.
I know it's not the security episode, but yeah, the more secure the environment, the tougher it is to get anything done.
Yeah.
Dang security. Rant.
At places I've worked, we used to give elevated privileges to certain users, and just, it was under the expressed consent of, look, we're going to give you this. If you screw something up, we are not going to attempt to recover it. We are just going to reimage it and hand it back to you. Understand? Yeah. Are we good here?
Well, and there's irony in taking away admin rights to somebody like me, because I have God rights to every network device in the company.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like,
yeah, but I think that's,
I could bring the data center down if I wanted to, but I can't, you know, install Firefox update on my laptop. I mean,
but
I understand
the point,
why,
right?
Because
then they're
going to
use your creds. Right.
If
something was to get your creds locally,
I get it. But when it first happened, I'm like, really? I run a global network and I can't update Firefox. Right. Like, okay. You know, what those little things that come up, it just seems so silly.
Whatever you want, man.
Yeah, right. Keep signing my check. Do what you got to do, man. It's all good. Yeah.
I find that funny because I have been in that position as a contractor for these other organizations, right? Like, you know, some security is such that you're given a laptop to use when you connect to certain customer environments. Mm-hmm. And just like you said, you know, I have God rights on every router and switch and maybe every firewall in the organization, but I can't install PuTTY on the laptop I was just on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Right.
They're like, if you can't connect, you can't.
So I think we beat this one.
Interested in hearing from someone who is a siloed network engineer on, like, you know, what do they love about their job and everything like that. I think that'd be a different perspective that I have not seen yet. Because I say, like, you know, I wouldn't want to be siloed, but I've also never been siloed, so I don't know. Maybe I would like it.
The only thing I can tell you from my experience is I liked being that big fish in the little pond. I liked knowing what I was doing. I liked not being mm-hmm. thrown for a lot of curveballs. And I could maybe mow the lawn one day at lunch because there's a rhythm to, you know, a job like that. You know when things break, you know when projects come, you know when you can take a breather, you see the you know, when you're doing a little bit of everything. I haven't found the rhythm yet. It's, you know,
I don't think there's a rhythm.
Yeah, right. No,
there isn't.
Yeah, but you know,
it's kind of like what AJ, or I think it was AJ, that were you just saying, AJ, about you don't go to work with a plan anymore?
No, I don't.
Yeah, exactly. That's how my day is. Like, if I go in, it's like, all right, I'll have one thing, because I used to like try to plan it all out, right? Like, I'm gonna do this and then I'm gonna do this after lunch, and then I'm gonna do this right before I leave, whatever. And now I'm just like, okay, if I just get the one thing done, I will be happy. Like, I don't care what time of the day it is.
You're right, Dan. I try to block my time in Outlook. So all the stuff I got to do, I block it out, and that's how I track my time. And invariably, it just gets pushed from Monday to Tuesday to Wednesday. Half of it winds up in Friday because I'm like, I didn't get to it. You know, I tried. Yeah.
I literally had these days where, like, I used to have this, like, 45-minute commute, so I'd be, like, driving, and I'm like, okay, this is when I get there. I'm going to go do this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to work on these issues. And I'd sit down at my desk after I get into work, and another server crashes, and the entire day is just, you know, sent sailing because now I'm working on something else that I had no intention of touching.
You got to be flexible in tech, right?
Yeah.
You can't be rigid. Yeah. You'd be miserable if you're rigid. Just got to go with the flow.
Right. So definitely just keep a punch list of the stuff you want to get done. And, you know, if you get to it, great. And if not, you're adding to the punch list.
Vary your skill set. Go with the flow. Don't be siloed. Learn automation.
Personal choice. if you have to function with rhythm, you know, maybe the silo's the way for you. But I would like to hear that from somebody else, though, that is siloed currently.
I've definitely seen situations too where, like, certain people are good with tasks and they get opportunities to focus on that task. Mm-hmm. Like, they start it and they can finish it and then they can move on to the next one, like help desk tickets or something like that. Mm-hmm. They don't do well, however, when they are interrupted on said task and they have to, like, bounce around and handle, like, multiple tasks at once.
So, you know, honest moment, I love the former and not the latter. In my old job, I had focus tasks and I had hours of uninterrupted time to work through them. And I really enjoy that. And I'm adjusting to this new world that apparently everybody else, you know, lives in, where just anything can change.
Squirrel.
Anything can change at any moment. And you just got to, it's been an adjustment for me because I've been doing the opposite for 5 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's almost like I'm back in the knock, man. Any given moment, the building could burn down around me and I just got to, you know. I was hoping the further along in my career I got, the more chill it would get. But that hasn't happened.
Well.
Yeah, which is fine.
It's interesting.
Excellent. Well, thanks, fellas, for sharing your thoughts on siloed versus not siloed. Again, I don't think we're trying to espouse that one's better than the other. I think it's just there's different experiences, right?
Right.
It sounds like we've all had an opportunity to be siloed and be the jack of all trades, and we certainly have our preferences, and hopefully you got a little something out of this one. Any parting thoughts before we head off, Andy?
I don't want the listeners that are listening to forget the fact that you both said you wouldn't hire a siloed one man, you know, the person you would hire. I mean, really, that's where the rubber meets the road. So, you know, my experience in the market and what you guys have said and what technology companies are doing, you know, who's just doing one thing. So I would think that a varied skill set, you know, in anything, if you take a car to the mechanic and you need brakes and he doesn't do brakes, it's not really all that helpful. Sure. Like, you want somebody who can do everything on a car. So if you're going to be a network guy, you're going to need to know more than route switch, you know, whether you're using the certification tracks as a gauge or whether you're using, you know, the job descriptions you see. None of them just say proficiency in EIGRP. That's it. We'll pay 80 grand. Like, they're just nobody's looking for that. So,
well, just a little asterisk on that though is the guy that I was interviewing just happened to be siloed in something that I wasn't interested in or that I was needing. Yeah, so,
Exactly.
If he had been siloed in Meraki, you know, that it might have been a different story.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, just throwing that out there that may, you know, sometimes being siloed in something might not be the end of the world, right?
That's true. So, yeah. My final thought is I'm glad that I'm now in a position where I'm learning new things and varying my skill set. And it's harder. It's more stressful. It's not my perfect, you know, psychological environment to be in. But, you know, like anything, I'm adjusting and it's my new normal. And, you know, I think career-wise, it's a good move personally.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Dan, any closing thoughts, parting shots?
Squirrel.
No, I think just kind of what Andy said, but I mean, I think it is personal choice, though. I personally think that being a jack of all trades, I get to dabble a little here, a little bit there. And so if I was in an interview, right, and someone brought up something about F5, well, it's like, oh, well, actually, I also have done that. I might not be a master at it, but I know what they're talking about when they start describing, you know, snats and pool members and all this stuff. It's not just going to go over my head, right? And so I don't know. I personally believe that being a jack of all trades is better, but dude, here's the thing. I've also worked with engineers who only work on VPN stuff, right? And they're freaking rock stars at it. Yeah. And it's nice because they know what they're talking about in depth. And it's like, okay, hold on. Let me check the logs on my side. Oh yeah, mine says that too. Like, what does that mean again? You know, so there's it, like I said, it's a double-sided sword.
Well, and Dan, you keep saying stuff that we're trying to wrap up here, but when I call TAC and I need an expert.
Exactly. There you go.
If I'm on Nexus, they send me a Nexus expert. Mm-hmm. If I'm on an ASR, they, you know, an iOS XE expert. So,
yep.
Yeah, there's definitely places for specific knowledge sets.
Yeah. But
absolutely.
Yeah. I just, you know, this episode's been more about my experience and it's been a jack of all trades. So I guess that's why I align with it more. I don't know.
How about you, AJ? What are your parting thoughts?
Yeah. I like that I'm a jack of all trades in my silo now, right? Like I focus on networking, but I'm not just like a route switch guy. I'm not just a wireless guy. Like I get to do a lot of the emerging tech. I do, you know, working on a VXLAN project. I get to do SD-WAN. I get to do ACI. I get to do automation. So I'm really enjoying that. And it definitely beats the one day I'm going to touch SQL. The next day I'm going to do networking. The next day it's going to be Exchange for sure. So it's a little bit more focused, but I still get a lot more options. And I'm always learning something new and I'm having a good time doing it. Awesome. Well, thank you guys. I will drop a little hint. It sounds like we got a big guest on the next episode. So you'll definitely want to tune back in for that. I'm not going to name any names, but you'll want to tune in for next week's episode. I will be out next week,
but
I'll
be back
shortly after that. So enjoy this one and then enjoy our special guest next week. Thanks, guys. Have a great day, night, wherever you happen to be. See ya. Hey everyone, this is AJ. If you like what you heard today, then make sure you subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcatcher. Smash that bell icon to get notified of all of our future episodes. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at ArtOfNetEng. That's Art of NetEng. You can also find us on the web at artofnetworkengineering.com, where we post all of our show notes You can read blog articles from the co-hosts and guests, and also a lot more news and info from the networking world. Thanks for listening.